Support for Commodity Week comes from the Friends of WILL and from Strategic Farm Marketing in Champaign. With crop insurance, grain marketing, and commodity brokerage services. Learn more at sfarmmarketing.com.
This is the May 18 edition of Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Our panelists today include Matt Bennett of Bennett Consulting, Channel Seeds, out of Windsor, Illinois, Dale Durkles of AgriVisor, Bloomington, Illinois, and Mike Zuzulo at Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting out of Atchison, Kansas. Commodity Week, of course, a production of Illinois Public Media. Find us online at willag.org. It's public radio for the farming world. Let's begin, as usual, with a list of questions we should cover for the day. Matt Bennett, what's on your topic list?
Obviously, we want to talk about the political situation in Brazil as well as the political situation in the U.S. Sometimes I wonder if we're not trying to see who's more inept, so it maybe boosts the value, drops our currency value and helps us on exports. But I'd be very interested to see what everybody has to say about the political implications right now, as well as, where do we think we're going to end up on acreage. I know that we caught up to pace this past week, but there's still obviously a fair amount of issues out in the Corn Belt, and I'd definitely be interested to hear the other guys' takes on the acreage situation as well.
Dale Durkles?
Well, two things hit my top button right now, and both of them are really questions. One of them has to do with what people's attitudes are about yield, especially when you get into conversations like you were having about Matt and replanting and the impact that's going to have. The other thing that's on my mind is still looking at things from a broader commodity perspective, and looking at these indices. Has anything really changed, even though over the last month or so they've been a little bit weaker than people expected?
And Mike Zuzulo.
I guess the only thing I could add to the other two guys is excellent things to talk about is the perspective of where prices are in corn and beans and wheat versus last year, Todd, and the trend in the global stocks and which of these commodities maybe has the most to lose, depending on how we shake out in the crop weather this year.
So Matt Bennett, I want to start with you. We will hear a few beeps in the background. Those are coming from you because you're out planting at this point, replanting some corn. I know you're replanting both crops to some extent. And I'm interested, as well as Dale, in what you're thinking about potential yield for this year on that crop, given that you've got to go back in and replant.
Right. It's been such an interesting spring in that we had just a phenomenal start. We were able to get everything in the ground before we got all that weather. We felt really good about soil conditions. We were extremely dry. The fact that we were dry helped us handle that first storm system quite well. The system did what it was supposed to do. Tile systems were able to keep up. The creeks were running bank full. And then down in our neck of the woods, Lake Shelbyville got full. And then that was the problem that we had when the second system came in. And so obviously we couldn't get rid of the water quick enough. With all that being said, our crop doesn't look too bad. But I definitely, would like viewer or I guess listeners to be able to see what I'm seeing as I drive through a field. We've got some really good stands in places, but there's definitely issues here and there. And I feel like my part of the world, I'm probably as blessed as anyone with where I'm at in relationship to the kind of weather we receive. So what kind of yield have we lost? I think most agronomists have agreed with my thought process in my part of the world. We've taken the top end off, but we still could have awfully good yields. But I think that it's going to require a producer, being fairly aggressive about, what they do to make their situation as good as they can make it from here on out, which, would include adding some nitrogen and, doing whatever they can do to do the analysis. Main thing though is nitrogen, though. Make sure that you get enough fertilizer to the corn, because I think the stands are good enough in enough place you can still have a decent crop.
just to add to what Matt talked about, maybe dress it up a little bit as far as the fine points west of the Mississippi River, as I think emergence and population are not nearly there as much as they have been the last 2 years, that we've really had a sincerely great crop start the last 2 years, and I would even throw 14 in there as a whole, but I think you've got a real issue there. The replant numbers are not going down, they're actually going up, because agronomists have come into the fields and given the crops plenty of time. I don't think the replant is over with yet either, based upon what we get in terms of rainfall totals. And so we're going into this late spring, early summertime period with some sort of a premium in the markets, but we don't know how much. And I think it goes back to, we have really heavy rains possibly coming to the winter wheat belt, both hard and soft red winter wheat, and that could be extremely bad for the crop quality as well as the crop size. And then you have the corn and the beans as well. And so I guess when I look at it from what Matt talked about and what I'm hearing from producers and agronomists, is we have more uncertainty, probably as much uncertainty at least since 2009 or 2011. And I don't think the market's used to this. It'll be interesting to see how they deal with this as far as risk premium.
Let's follow up with you just a little bit on that Kansas wheat crop, because we talked with Romolo Lolato earlier in the day on Thursday, and this is already posted up on the website at willag.org, or you can find it in my Twitter feed at Commodity Week. I think there's about 5 to 7 minutes there. He's been back out into that Kansas wheat crop. It got snowed on. It was cold for several days because the snow was deep. There is some disease problem. He was surprised, Mike, that the wheat crop wasn't hurt nearly so much by the cold as he expected. However, it was the weight of the snow on that western area. They had as much as 23 inches in some places that's caused mostly the problems. He's still pretty confident, though, that they've got a decent crop out there if they can get the weather. And from his perspective, moist and cold wouldn't be so bad, but hot, which is normally the case in the western part of Kansas, would be really quite bad, that they just wouldn't fill heads out and they might have some problems with their test weights at that point. I don't know what you've been hearing from the farmers you talk to in that area, but I guess there are still a lot of questions about the Kansas wheat crop.
Almost everything he said makes perfect sense from what I've been hearing too, but I have heard more than one, and I think K-State is even talking about this in their latest e-update, that you have an advanced maturing crop as far as heading, and you do not want a lot of rains, especially if you have a rust and a stripe a problem with disease and fungus, because you're not going to get fungicide on. And so quality is certainly high in the minds of the producers I've talked about, and this is not the time to be getting a lot of rains. I think the only thing I would add to this is his perspective, I think, fits almost perfectly where the trade is at. You really have to be, I think, pushing it through the combine before, and seeing yields not there, before the trade's going to accept that we don't have the wheat crop that the Wheat Quality Tour posted, even though they looked at probably 2/3 the number of fields they normally do because of that heavy rain you're talking about, Todd. So it may be seasonally we don't get that wheat rally at all before harvest, and we actually have a counter seasonal rally once we actually get in the fields. And that's something I'm kind of planning for with my clients.
Hey, Dale Durkles, we haven't got your assessment of what you're hearing from people yet.
The one thing I think that neither of them really touched on that I think we got to be desperately careful about, and that is the weather forecast we get into starting next week and stretch out for the next 10 days, 2 weeks at times, and that's cold. You know, and we got some potentially pretty extreme cold coming down in here. And, you know, when you get into the wheat, depending upon where the cold air comes down from, I mean, you can turn frost some wheat in northern Kansas, maybe very southern Nebraska yet, that's in the process of starting to head out at this point in time. You worry a bit about, you know, with beans that are already in the ground, if you get a real cold wave and some frost, what do people do with that at that point? So as much as looking at the moisture aspect of this thing, I think we've got to recognize that we've got some temperature issues that we got to be a little bit careful about here as well.
So let's turn our attention to the thing that really moved the market this week. And I'll start with you, Matt Bennett. I would have thought that if we were going to have some kind of issue that was politically motivated out of the Western Hemisphere, it would come from Washington, D.C. However, a surprise out of Brazil on Wednesday evening and a scandal with their president dropped the value of the real dramatically. And that, I guess, will make crop, if farmers there decide to sell, really quite competitive for both corn and soybeans on the world marketplace.
Absolutely. You know, just as we were seeing, you know, the dollar struggling here the last several days, you see the corn market there, you know, on Wednesday, had a nice day whenever soybeans struggled a little bit. I had a couple, three clients who called me kind of excited, you know, just the start of a little rally in the corn market. And then they weren't so excited whenever the overnight market started. You know, some pretty long faces. Obviously, with some of the political stuff that's going on, it's quite interesting because whenever you see the value of the real drop several percent, you know, up to 8%, you know, definitely it changes the landscape. Whereas the U.S. has been super competitive, you know, in the last several weeks, months, if you will, we've been pretty competitive. It's you know, it's a little bit concerning to see, you know, the real drop in this manner. So I think that it definitely takes a little bit of enthusiasm out at this point. But I think that for me, from a long-term perspective, I don't look at this as being something that is going to necessarily kill the corn market. I think that it's probably going to have more of an adverse impact on the soybean market, especially if it's got legs and we do find out that this has some authenticity to it. But I'm not as concerned with the corn market as what I am with the soybean market for a couple of different reasons. We can go into more detail there, but you know, one of them would be world and U.S. drawdown and corn stocks to me is a bigger story. And I think that it's something that's not going to go away, even if in the next few weeks, the Brazilians are more competitive on the world corn export market. So I'd definitely be interested to hear what the other guys have to say as well. I don't want to take up too much of the time.
You know, when you get into political things like this, you never know. You just deal with it each day as the day comes along now. But the one thing I will say, you know, with what happened last night and the reaction here today, we've probably already taken the knee-jerk reaction out of the movement of the currencies now, and things should calm down here sometime starting tomorrow, if even not tonight. The one thing, you know, and Matt's a little bit more worried about it in terms of beans and corn, but I'll flip it back another way. You know, and some people we have contact with down in Brazil basically have been telling us that Brazilian producers, where we have the second crop corn, are probably going to be more inclined to be marketing corn and holding on to beans. So I guess I come back and I worry a little bit the other way, in that, you know, we never see these bean sales live up to what they kind of think. And we also have to remember they've already marketed somewhere around 2/3 or something like that of their soybean crop at this point. But, you know, I don't know that the negative repercussions are going to be as big on beans as what some people generally think they're going to be. It kind of fits into another thing, and I talked about and do occasionally, from a cyclic perspective. The markets still tell me, you know, the beans had a low back in the middle of April, and the corn has had a low too. So I don't know that with prices now getting back down close to the lower end of the range, there's a lot of downside risk anymore.
Mike Suslow, do you have anything to add here?
One main thing I think that could add to the conversation, and that is the real was technically primed for a sell signal on the monthly chart. I think you and I even talked about that last week, Todd, and I think this was just waiting for a reason to jump. Granted, no one had the idea that it would be because of something similar we're dealing with here in the United States as far as a confidence issue in the president of that country. But this is a very negative feature to the bean market, because if this monthly buy signal in the dollar against the real is valid, then you're talking about something that could be with us 35, 45, 60 days, something like that. And so I would only point out that the lead month beans have had very strong sideways support and resistance levels at 1040, 940, and 840, plus or minus a dime. And I am concerned that if this buy signal in the dollar against the real ends up creating a move below 940 in lead month beans. We'll go back to a carrying charge market in the beans, and you open yourself up in the medium term to an 840 level in the lead month beans. And so this is where I think bought puts are an extremely valuable tool based upon these technicals. So other than taking the desire by the opposing party here in this country to impeach our president very seriously, that's the only thing I could add.
Hey, Dale, I want you to go back on the Brazilian real and take a look at the chart for me. I was checking out that chart earlier today. It looks like the lowest point over the last year was in December, December 1. And that was much lower than where we dropped to any time on Thursday, which is when we're recording this. I suppose, does that give you some perspective on how much support there might be under the real still yet at these levels?
Yeah, you've got to be really careful. Just looking at nearby futures on the real, we had a low back, it looks like, early November even, that was about 28.35, you know, and so we've got about another roughly 100 points or so down yet, you know, before we get into that at this point. You can make the argument, and, you know, one thing Mike was talking about, and I won't disagree, when you look at the pattern, and we had the last big low in the real actually was back in September of 15, and you know, the move up that we had into February could have been a completion of a move up. So, you know, we could go into what would ultimately look like a big corrective move. And that would say, you know, if we go below that November low, things get even deeper and more dire for a while, which would tend to work against the beans a little bit. One thing that hasn't been mentioned here at this point, everybody is, and you read all the opinions here today with everything that happened, everybody steps back and they talk about, well, what's going to be the impact back to the Brazilian producer? How's he going to market beans, et cetera? What's all this going to mean to the cost of his inputs for next year's crops? That's a huge factor people really haven't even thought about today. Because if you continue to weaken the real itself, it basically starts really levitating the cost of inputs they have for both corn and beans for the next crops themselves. So you have to also build this into the mix, especially in an environment where with corn and with beans, you know, we really aren't seeing any huge increases in terms of overall potential supply out there, depending upon what our crop here in the U.S. does or doesn't do, you know, this summer. And I'm talking about world supplies.
One other thing, on sort of the same area, but I want to go back to what the Brazilian producer might do. Corey Melby, who's been on this program as a guest, is in Brazil. He's a Minnesota farmer as well, but he spends part of his time, or I think the bulk of his time, in South America. Made note today that he thought that Mato Grosso would be covered with silo bags this year filled with corn. Do you think they'll actually store corn, and could that be a supportive note to the marketplace? And I guess, Matt Bennett, I'll point to you on this one.
Well, I think if they're going to store, I mean, obviously it would be a little bit different than what Dale's feelings were there, that maybe they would be a little more apt to be moving corn. I mean, at this point, to be honest with you, if that happened, I think it would be supportive by all means. I think, you know, in the grand scheme of things, yes, it's a pretty darn big corn crop, but it's interesting to note, you know, that you look at the USDA's projections for the world drawdown in stocks, and that's the largest drawdown in stocks we've seen in a great deal of time. And so, you know, for me, I think that, you know, even if they do move a little bit of corn, I think in the grand scheme, again, for me, I feel like we've got good support for this corn. I'm not saying that we're going to rally through the roof, but at this point, if we're going to say that, you know, we're going to have a 2-1 carry out for the next marketing year, assuming a 170.7. I'm just not in a 170.7 camp right now. I think it's way too early. And I think that there's a lot of reasons why you could make a case for for things being significantly lower, although I do think it's too early to get into any yield talk on a large level. But I certainly think there's a lot of implications, and given the demand that we have, the supply implications at this point are probably a little bit premature.
Are you of a mind that the yield in the United States will be suffering in part because acreage won't be put in the ground too?
Well, you know, I think whenever you look at the acreage discussion, you know, the intentions at 90, I think that, you know, some folks thought that maybe that was a little shy. But the bottom line is this hasn't been what you would call an ideal spring once again. And so are the acres going to be in the ground? Maybe. You know, are we going to have the quality? Are we going to have the stands? Are we going to be able to look at this crop and say, hey, we don't have a whole lot of issues? No, we're absolutely not going to be able to say that this year. And so I think there's a lot to be learned about this crop as we go through. And I just don't think that we have room for a whole lot of major weather issues this summer, because I think that if you start to ratchet down your yield into the mid-160s, people are going to start entering into full-on panic mode, in my opinion.
Dale, what are your thoughts on acreage at this time?
You know, I think when just taking a look at the USDA numbers there, 170.7, I think it is, and beans are at 48, I think, you know, the planting issues and the early issues we've had really kind of argues a little bit against yields going higher versus going lower. To put an exact number on it, I'm like, Matt, you really have a difficult time in doing it at this particular point because it is so early. You know, one interesting twist when you do look at weather this year is that it almost seems to be a repeat, although the timing was a little earlier this year, of the weather we had 2 years ago, which had that heavy rain band from Missouri across southern Illinois into Indiana and on into Ohio itself, and better conditions north and west. 2 years ago, we had a 48 bushel bean yield and a corn yield that was around 170. Isn't that an interesting twist? But I would say the odds favor, or the situation favors, we could lose a little bit more from those USDA numbers than gain, or lose easier, I guess would be a better way to put it.
Mike Suzzolo, you said you wanted to talk about global grain stocks and trends in them. You've been doing some work, I take it, in that area.
Well, just a couple basic points. USDA made a decent amount of important note in their World Grain Circular this month after the WASD report, Todd, that we did see the world wheat ending stocks go up, but it was all China. And in the 17-18 marketing year, excluding China, world wheat stocks are actually going to be in decline this year. And I think it's a very welcome thing. And one of the things that I've really wanted to hold my feet to the fire analytically was what we talked about at the beef house, and that wheat would no longer be a bearish leader and a weight to the corn market. And so I continue to force the issue, okay, is that still good, valid analysis? And based upon the Egyptian sale of wheat, of United States hard red wheat, this and us getting 40% of the tender this week, And what the USDA pointed out in their circular, I think it does have the market's attention. I still think that wheat is a better crop that will support the corn, even though we've seen the wheat-corn spread collapse here the last 3 weeks. I think, and when it's all said and done, wheat will be a better number supply-wise for the corn. It's the beans that I worry more about for 2017, 2018.
Hey, so I want to take a poll of all three of you, actually, on this Thursday afternoon. On the 18th day of May, after we had a problem in South America with Brazil and the real dropping, soybeans plummeting, and I don't know whether I want to call plummeting because we went half, well, not quite half of half of a move for a full day. Are you feeling in the corn, soybean, and wheat market more or less friendly than you did yesterday? And maybe you didn't feel friendly yesterday at all. Dale, why don't you start for me?
I don't feel any different today than I did yesterday. And yesterday when I responded to the Bloomberg survey they put out every week, you know, do you want to be a buyer or seller? I was bullish all three. And I see no reason to really change that attitude today. The one thing I will admit when you start looking at the markets themselves, I would concur with what Mike said. Wheat's not going to be a bear drag on the market anymore. And in fact, you know, there's some things that suggest, you know, it could be more robust as far as a bull than people think. I like the grains a little bit better than I do the oil seeds, but I have for the last few weeks.
Mike Suzzolo?
I think that I have to put the favorable outlook in corn on the side burner because of the threat of the soybeans. So if we lose 935, 940 in lead month beans, and we lose that 200-day moving average in Dease corn and make new weekly lows in Dease corn, which we're almost there after today's close, I'm not going to fight the idea that beans can drag the corn down with it just because the trade has shown me no respect whatsoever when it comes to these massive net short positions in corn by the managed money holder. So I have no problem putting on a 10 or 15 cent corn put and saying, okay, take half of it away from me, close back up above 396 and break this stupid channel we've been in and get serious about covering these shorts. Because if I take a 7 or 8 cent hit and a put, and I think that's the max downside, if I can take that kind of a known cost loss and think that I can get 40 cents on the upside, I'll take that in the circumstances and the political environment we're in right now. So I don't know how to answer the question other than that, Todd. I hope I didn't dance around it too much.
No, I think I got what your meaning is, that you're a little scared of the political situation, but you think there's upside potential. Matt Bennett, how about you?
Yeah, I would say I'm probably a combination of both of these guys. I'm probably a little more friendly to the grains than I am the oil seeds like Dale. I'm very concerned about the political environment. I'm concerned, you know, again, it's pretty hard to watch in the 24-hour period, you know, that we, like I said before, you see the dollar weaker, which obviously was not hurting our commodities by any stretch of the imagination. And then you turn around the overnight and you smoke the market based upon what's going on in Brazil. So, you know, I guess in my opinion, long term, again, I'm probably pretty friendly to corn. I think that there's a lot of things that would suggest to me you're going to need awfully, awfully good weather this summer in order to keep that huge net short of 200,000 plus with the funds intact. I think if they start to panic, obviously you're going to look at a fairly quick move, and it could be a very robust move. And so probably more friendly corn than I am the other two, and I'm probably, if I was going to rank them, I'd probably go corn, wheat, and beans.
Let's wrap this up, and we'll get a final word from each of you. I think I'll start with you, Mike Suzzolo, Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting out of Atchison, Kansas.
Great to be with you again, Todd, and with these great guys on the other line, too. It's been a nice show. I'll pull out three numbers. Versus last year, November beans are up about 14 cents. As of the close of May, Dease corn down about 63 cents, and July soft red wheat down about $1.18 a bushel. So with declining world stocks of wheat and corn at this stage of the game, certainly the corn and the wheat have the most discount in them. So that leaves beans a big question mark in my mind.
Dale Durkles from AgriVisor.
You know, the one thing going back to commodity indices, you know, we continue to trade in a fairly broad sideways to lower correction since we had the run-up in the early part of 2016. And right now in the short term, I do have cycle counts that tell me, you know, we're in a window for commodity indices to bottom, and I wonder if we already did in the first part of May. So if we break out above the highs we've had here in the last couple of weeks, I think something's going on in commodities we have to respect that's more friendly than people think.
And finally, Matt Bennett of Bennett Consulting.
Well, I think it's awfully tough to outguess the soybean market. The last 24 hours have definitely proven that to us. Again, as I usually say, I want to look at the profit margins. And, you know, if a producer still feels like they want to protect the downside, I guess I'm along board with Mike. And then I think that if you you violate some of your support, it could get pretty ugly. And so I think that moving ahead, I definitely want to be keeping an eye on my my break evens and, you know, be diligent in protecting what profit margins, if I have one, if I have any. Being able to protect them as I move forward.
Commodity Week, of course, is a production of Illinois Public Media. You may listen to the whole of our program online at willag.org, willag.org. Our thanks to our panelists this week, including Dale Durkles of AgriVisor, Mike Suzzolo from Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting, and Matt Bennett of Bennett Consulting, Channel Seeds. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.